Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm Daniel Prue, and I'm joined here, as always, by my lovely co-hosts, Philip and Darren. How are you guys doing today?
I'm fired up and ready to go, Daniel.
I'm lovely as always.
Oh, all right. So, guys, we've done this kind of archetype show twice before. We've done the Doctors and the Engineers. And let's start talking about,
assistance to the captain.
No,
the green shirts.
Not that.
Oh,
no.
See, that's what I was going to do. The people who place the ferns in the room.
So checkerboard, bartenders.
I think, wouldn't Keiko be maybe in charge of the ferns? But anyways, that doesn't matter. No, we are not talking about those people. We are talking about the shooty bang bang people. the lovely officers that make things go boom. We are going to talk about the security officers / tactical officers / phaser firers.
Weapons.
Wait, we're talking about Enterprise Extra? Wow, I didn't know we got a whole podcast.
So let's, as we do, well, let's just talk about the role in general. Obviously, it depends on the series, and obviously we'll get into it, but sometimes these people can be kind of throwaway, possibly, maybe. What do you guys think? What do you think about the role of the security officer? I mean, obviously it would make sense that these ships are immensely powerful weapons. It only makes sense that we have these characters that are kind of in charge of that, as well as ship security. Although I would argue that is two separate jobs for two separate people. But anyways, Star Trek likes to mish things together because, well, actors cost money. But anyways, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree. I think we've talked, when discussing departments in the past, a little bit about that two-person role, which it makes a lot of sense. It's kind of like you have, like the FBI and the CIA, and one does inside the country and one does outside the country. Like there should totally be two people behind that horseshoe with chairs. And yeah, one person is responsible for like the emergency force fields to contain people, like the brig, all the security personnel, and then they do a good job at it. I'm just saying,
if there's two people, one person could be charging and firing phasers while the other person sees the unauthorized transporter / shuttle bay opening, and then they wouldn't be so multitasking that they would miss it. And
see, there you go.
And then there's also, you'd have a second person there who is Mr. Shooty Shooty Bang Bang and shooting the phasers. They're coordinating firing arcs. They're figuring out new and unique ways to shoot those cloaked ships. And every time they both do a good job, they could give each other a high five. And it would just be, that's how I'd run my bridge. So I agree with you, Daniel. It is a little, the fact that you had to put a lot of hyphens and / in that description, it's a little tricky, but I think we can weed out who we mean. You can easily tell, do they push a button or not? It really comes down to it. Do they have the football or not?
I have the ball. What is this, Battlestar? I think it's interesting because, theoretically Starfleet and Federation are, peaceful organization, right? We're here only for defense. And so it's like, I see your ship of exploration seems packed with torpedoes and is called the Defiant. I feel like it's a mixed message. Of course, the red shirts, right? There's the big red shirts thing, which I think is very interesting since the majority of Star Trek is actually yellow shirts for that now. But that mystique or that zeitgeist lives on the red shirts. And so I feel like I'm always correcting people. Like, oh, you're red. No, it's actually 24. Never mind. Yes, it's a red shirt.
You bringing up the Defiant like that makes me think of, let's build a giant black ship and call it the Vengeance. And I'm not evil at all, I swear.
We don't have a chip on our shoulders, oh, Vengeance. But it's, it's we're going to hide it behind Jupiter. No one will ever see it.
Oh, but I'm just saying, you know, when I'm in the mood for a nice Miller Lite or whatever was featured in those movies, I do like to get my Vengeance model and just crack open a bottle in the middle there with it. So
Budweiser Classic.
Yeah, Budweiser Classic. Yes.
Yes. I always thought it did look like a can opener. And
did you brew a fresh one in Main Engineering?
Wow. Yeah, that's maybe. This whole thing is about beer, isn't it?
Anyways, that's a topic for a whole, actually an interesting topic that we could probably get into at some
beer point, and Trek, I'm there.
Now you're just sabotaging the JJ verse.
Sabotage. Anyways, so as we do here, we're going to start chronologically by started, and we're going to talk Enterprise. We're going to talk. There you go. We are going to talk about the originator of the Red Alert.
Mr. Malcolm some people Reed. Like to call it the Reed Alert, but you know.
So, how do we feel about good old Malcolm?
I think Enterprise, in my opinion, I'll just couch in that. In my opinion, had a lot of challenges with some of its characters. You know, so much attention on your big three, trying to capture that TOS, and then you sort of had your flocks as well. But a lot of people kind of suffered as a result. I think Malcolm suffered. I mean, not, you know, not Travis Montgomery territory, but one tier above that, you have poor Malcolm. I mean, he gets some decent episodes, or at least, you know, but I feel like we never really got to know the man behind the Reed Alert.
Yeah, I feel a good formula for Star Trek is it's always the partners. I mean, you look at TNG and yes, everyone starts as their own character, but you can't think of Data without him doing something with Geordi or Riker and Troy or, you know, or Brian and Julian on DS9. So I feel Reed, you know, never got his counterpoint character. I mean,
well, he and Trip did get drunk together and go on.
Yes, but I mean, they had a shore leave or a, you know, they were stuck together in Shuttle Pod 1, but it was just wasn't enough. Right. Like, and I would say you can't use Trip because it's Trip and the captain. I mean, that's the much stronger.
And Trip and T'Pol.
And T'Pol, yeah. So I agree with you, Philip, that maybe it should have been like Travis. Like, that would have been cool to see them, you know, bond over something. I don't know. I feel that helps when you're doing an ensemble type show where, yes, you're going to have your leads, but in Star Trek, we're so used to everyone having kind of an equal share, especially when you have shows like DS9 where they go, I mean, they cast the net far and wide with their cast, but yet a lot of those characters, those minor, like third level characters, seem to get more development than Reed. So he did suffer from that. But his mirror universe counterpart was really awesome. So,
well, and I think it's interesting that how often characters are defined by their roles. Like, you know, the doctors are going to all be ethical and caring, you know, just because they're the doctors. And, you know, all the tactical folks are just going to be like, shoot first, ask questions later. And, you know, sometimes is that a little exaggerated? Because, you know, I think like Reed is almost like the Human Worf. I mean, he's always like, you know, he always stands in front of the captain on an away mission, you know, shooting people left and right. And, you know, it's always like, hey, calm down, Reed. We're actually here to explore, believe it or not. But of course, I guess that's, you know, that's his job. So I guess can't fault him. And certainly I think there's a lot of cool things that as Enterprise's role or one of its roles is in developing the Star Trek we know today. Malcolm Reed does do a lot. He creates a tactical alert that we talked about. He actually doesn't create them, but sort of helps create the phasers we know, because, you know, in that Silent Enemy or whatever it is.
Yeah, the phase cannons. Yeah.
Yeah. But like he like, you know, I forget, like, you know, overpowers them and creates the phasers we know, you know, and then like he's on that Klingon ship and it's like, photon torpedoes, what's that, you know? And so I you know, I think he earns his stripes in the 22nd century for the development of tactical knowledge and technology.
He wrote the book. I mean, the brick with Word. That's what I meant.
You know, I like Reed. I mean, I agree with what you guys are saying. Totally. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He doesn't get a lot of character. I mean, he does. He gets some moments, like Shuttlepod 1, which is mentioned. And I always think
Minefield, or whichever episode that is.
Talking to the captain.
Section 31 arc.
I'm
not saying it's good. I'm just saying it gets it.
Look, Dr. Crusher also got an episode about a candle, but I'm not saying.
But I get the feeling that
a candle.
There you go.
And, you know, like I said, I like Reed, but I also get the feeling that he's also not an interesting human person in a way. Like, you know how in the original series, Scotty just reads technical manuals, but he's also funny and drinks a lot and tells jokes and stuff. Reed is like that, but a lot more straight laced. So he doesn't even have the fun part about him. He's just all business all the time, and that's just fine. I mean, that is a character, and that is there are people like that. So I just kind of get the feeling that he's just more of a less interesting character. In a lot of ways, which is okay.
Did he? And I'm going to top my head, which is dangerous. Did he ever even get a love interest? Like, I know he ogled the ladies and T'Pol's bomb, and then the Orion slave girls. But did he ever actually have a love interest ever?
There were, in fact, I believe they came out and said it. He was originally intended to be the first gay character for Star Trek, and then they kind of chickened out of that, and. And I'm reminded of that episode where E2, where Reed finds out that he's like one of the only people on the ship that doesn't ever find a romantic interest. So, yeah, no, I can't think of one off the top of my head.
But I mean,
that's
pretty sad, right? Like, I mean, even just in 4 years, like, Travis had more than one love interest, if I recall, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, if you have this reticent character, which, like, Minefield is an example of that, you know, he's so withdrawn, he's so duty-minded, he's so protocol-minded, and that's fine. But, yeah, what's the hook for that character other than British? You know, that's not – I need more than that. You know, it's like being a boomer. You know, okay,
and
I got it.
And that's where I would have liked him, like I was saying, like, maybe paired up with adventures with Travis more, because Travis is – much of I've been in space, but it was my family, so it was probably very relaxed. It was probably very, you know, everyone knows their roles and everyone just kind of does it. And that would have been interesting to see, you know, Travis help him maybe get a promotion or like rise up in the ranks a bit, but then Travis can help Reed kind of loosen up a little, and they could, you know, and everybody wins.
Yeah, and I don't think I have any problems with Malcolm, except the problems I do have with Malcolm is in the third season, because when the Makos come and he's such like a dick to them, like the whole time unnecessarily, like I could get a little
like they're on his turf and he just won't have it. And it's like, really?
But, and I could get some of that, but then I'm blanking on the character. Major
Mako. It's an action figure.
Yeah. But what's his face? All I can always think of him is he played Bobby Kennedy in 13 Days movie. But anyway, that guy who I'm trying to think of, the major, like, he's always like, you know, major's trying to take over my job. He's like, no, he's not. He's really nice, actually, and he's trying to help you out, and he respects you, and why are you being terrible to him? And like, that's the entire third season. I'm just like, I can't. Malcolm, I mean, what?
Hayes.
Major Hayes, yes. Yeah.
I prefer Major Mako.
And again, this
with
is
a kick action action figure. That's how I'm writing it down.
It's interesting. Again, this is the same problem from before, where this is like separation of duties here, man. Like, these people have a totally different specialty than you do. You need to chill out and let them do their job. Like, I agree. That was a little heavy-handed. But then we got to see them fight, and it was all cool.
And he liked him, and then by him liking him, he killed him, because then Major Hayes died.
Oh. Spoilers! So anyways, yep. Darren briefly mentioned it. I was going to just kind of bring it up and not delve too far into it. But of course, this is the first canonical reference we have to Section 31. And my personal feelings are that that needs to be mentioned N-1 times for every time that it's mentioned. So, you know, it seems to be the thing that keeps coming back up after it was invented. Which is fine. I actually don't have a problem with Reed because it's so far removed from everything else.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's a crutch sometimes.
Yeah. And, a little fan I don't want to see like, hey, y'all like that from Deep Space Nine, right? Y'all could talk about it. Yeah. Let's.
But anyways, all right, let's move on. Let's move on. We've talked about Reed enough. And so we will move on to the original series, which, of course, had the very famous character of.
Yeah, who was that? Because.
Yes. I remember, who was.
I mean, Sulu pushed the button because he had the little targeting thing that came up. And then Chekhov was, I'd say, if anything, it's Chekhov because of like the movies.
Well, the movies.
It is the movies, right? Chekhov in the movies, yeah.
But TV series.
And, oh, well, in the show, it's that one guy they call down to in like, Balance of
like
Terror.
Fire control.
Of course,
the one
time we actually have to call down to a room to say launch torpedoes and stuff. Yeah.
Well, I remember this. The highest, and I don't remember his name because I'm not that nerdy, but I am nerdy enough, that the highest ranking red shirt you ever see is a lieutenant commander in, the Horde episode. I was going to pretend like a new.
Devil in the Dark.
Right. So you do actually do see like.
Oh, yeah.
In one episode. I know. I got it. But still.
What rank is Scotty then? Is he a lieutenant?
He's also. No, he's a lieutenant commander as well. Oh, okay. But I'm saying he's the highest. By red shirt, I mean security. Sorry, when I say red shirt, I mean security.
Okay.
But like, you know, because you always see like Ensign dying a second, walking around the planet. Or crewman, really. Who are we kidding?
Because there's no red. I mean, well, there's communications, but there's except for when Scotty's up there, there's like very little red on the bridge.
Yeah, it's the blue shirts of the rest of the series. But yeah, it's
no. The blue shirts are the blue shirts of the rest of the series.
I mean, I don't know. I don't want to skip over TOS and TAS, but yeah, I mean, it is interesting in the motion picture. I don't know if they actually say it, but it does seem that Lieutenant Chekhov is the weapons officer.
Yeah, well, in the motion picture when Decker and Kirk are battling over like commands for firing torpedoes, he's the one about to fire torpedoes.
Oh jeez.
Belay that order.
20 seconds.
Let's just do the whole movie right here, guys.
I was going to say, the whole movie is actually 30 minutes, but once you include the shot of the ship,
it's like when
Chekhov
you play
the wormhole,
Star Trek The Interactive VCR board game, you think you have an hour, and then about 20 minutes in, they're like, oh, you went through time warp and lost like 10 minutes off your play time. This is tricky, tricky.
Yeah, so it's TOS is tough. I'm even trying to remember now in JJ-verse. Kelvin-verse. Well, Cupcake, there is Cupcake, who I actually completely forgot about and wasn't going to mention. That's a good point.
It's not Cupcake.
But who do they shoot? When he says
the red shirt in 09 who gets splat.
Oh, is he the one who does the jump?
Oh, but he was the engineer. He was Olsen.
Was he? Okay.
Olsen is gone.
That's why Scotty. That's why Scotty becomes the instant chief engineer.
They shot. So this is how much I paid attention to 09. So they shot the chief engineer down into the. That was dumb.
Well, he had hand-to-hand combat.
Really? As an engineer? Is that was his thing?
Well, I mean...
Someone built up their character sheet a little diversely.
Sulu knew how to fence, and he was pilot,
Kirk goes down because he's Kirk. Sulu goes down because of the defense. And then, yes, it makes sense to send the chief engineer to disable a mechanical platform. He just...
I guess.
But he, you know... wasn't that good at jumping, so that didn't go over very well. But
oh, the jumping he was great at. It was the landing that he was not so. Yeah. But so I'm trying to remember even in the JJ verse when he's like telling people to fire things. Who do they cut to?
They don't really fire a lot as much as get fired into, as I remember the three movies.
Yeah, it's true. But to be fair, there's a lot more people on that bridge, and
I think they each have a phaser array each. And so,
again,
that's why you have like
Sulu's obviously the pilot. I mean, he's obviously the navigator.
Right.
And
he's
flying.
Punching it.
He's literally punching it. But I would then maybe Chekhov, because he's right there on that console. But I, except for making an announcement, I don't know what he does.
They change his role in 2009, and he's no longer like strictly the navigator. He's more kind of like a science officer in a way.
He's the chief engineer the next movie. He's, you know, that tells you.
And then
he's
interesting. So TOS doesn't really have this role. I guess it didn't get really defined until later. Of course, like we mentioned, Chekhov in the movies.
Well, but even funny though, that's in the movie, like one, literally one.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, so like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's not Sulu in 6, I can tell you that.
Oh, I see. That's true. I would just say it's whoever's sitting at that station, because that seems to be where they fired from. I know who the
tactical officer on the Klingon ship in 5 was, but that's another story.
Yeah, so, you know, we don't have to spend forever talking about it. Although Cupcake was a good.
I mean, he's definitely security.
He certainly is, yeah. You know. All right, so let's move on then.
I mean, we don't know his real name, but just.
I don't know his real name. You're right. I don't. We'll look it up later. So let's move on to TNG and talk about.
So, I mean, I think Lieutenant Yar, I mean, where do you start with and end with her? Apparently, the answer is all good things. So,
yeah.
Oh, that's yesterday actually, that's a good, is Enterprise. That's
a good we can start with her. In fact, we should start with Yar. Here we go. Actually, we were just talking about how there should be 2 security officers. Although Worf was not a security officer. So I guess really I can't even say that. Never mind. I take it back.
He was vague what he was. I think, like, I remember in the show Bible, like, he was supposed to be like a Marine kind of.
Yeah, I don't know what he was, because he just sat in
the back and went on away.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just around.
But he was a red shirt in the very beginning, so he wasn't even. He was in command division. I don't know. He was looking for an honorable second that he could kill if they didn't perform their duties in true Klingon fashion. But
I just like that he was just literally wandering around. Like, he just ends up taking, like, the tour, and then, like, oh, the Enterprise left right now. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to stay in the back and press buttons. And yes, sir. I don't know what any of these buttons do. Science. Why am I on this station?
Okay, I have a question for you guys then. Let's say that Denise Crosby had stayed on, but they had also decided to make Worf move to gold shirt and tactical. Who would you... Let's say they did the 2 character.
Look, the gold shirt is large enough.
It's very large. Who would you have being the tactical officer, aka outside the ship, and who would you have being security officer, aka inside the ship?
I'll let Daniel go first. I know my answer. What would you say, Dan?
I would say that Worf should be internal security.
See, I was going the other way around.
Really?
Because to me, Yar... I mean, not that Worf can't kick butt, obviously, but I just imagining Yar... like, running around the ship, beating up people who, you know, are doing bad things, and Worf, the one who's, you know, remembers how to fire phasers, so.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I was thinking the same thing, except I was thinking, well, Worf likes to carry a big sword around everywhere he goes, so, I mean, maybe that would be useful in that line of work, but, I mean, I could see it going either way,
I mean,
for sure.
I initially would lean towards Worf being at tactical, because I would think... he'd be more of like a tactician, yet no one ever listens to him at tactical. So maybe he would be better in, you know, security, yet people break onto the Enterprise all the freaking time. So I'm looking at his resume and it's really not helping me decide. maybe sensor maintenance has a position.
Yeah.
I really think.
I was going to say, tell that to Odo. He's got all that stuff written down in the chalkboard.
How many times did the Enterprise become when you were on board?
I'm just saying, the Ferengi and children, Commander.
oh, man.
Yeah, but, you know, it's interesting because in real time, TNG sort of introduced what a tactical officer should be. You know, because we don't have a communications officer, right, anymore. So I guess that sort of
anyone can hold open the push the call open button.
Yeah. Well, that sort of became Worf's job. He was Yar's job, and then Worf's job. They were sort of the hailing frequencies open.
So he's communications and tactical and security. It's like, come on, guys, got to diversify the bridge just a little bit.
I'm just saying, learn to delegate. You know.
Remember, there are like 15 stations on that bridge, and only 6 people ever on.
Well, it's like how 80s was Next Generation. Like, we got to do more with less, guys. Like, we've got to
be lean
personnel.
We gotta,
We can't even afford chairs for everybody. Like, is this even union? What is going on here? Oh man. So yeah, obviously, you know, now we're talking about the role that Worf held. where he, you know, he the joke that he was always told no. We've all seen that YouTube video, which is hilarious. But most of the time, he does want to destroy peaceful things and things that are not.
I mean, there's a whole DS9 episode on him destroying a peaceful thing by shooting first and asking questions later. So there is precedent.
But he, you know, he kind of is what you, or at least the first thing I think of when I think tactical officer, right, is Worf.
You see,
he kind of, I think, defined that role.
I know this is a stupid argument, but I'll make it. I feel like Yar, as little as we saw, I got it, we saw her very little, but she was balanced. I feel like she wasn't like die hard, I want to kill everyone, but she did her job. I mean, like, you know, because Worf is very extreme, but I think you will see that in, as we go along with all the other folks, you know. He wasn't, every now and then he'd calm down, but he was just sort of like, shoot everything, kill everything. And sort of like, hey, you know.
Good tea. Nice house.
He does like tea. That's true. No, and of course, that is really just the stereotype. You know, it's like Kirk gets all the alien ladies and stuff. Like, these are things that arise out of a pattern, but they're not nearly as prevalent
exactly.
For just watching the show, right. You know. He is taken seriously. It's not like nobody ever listens to Worf. I would take him way less seriously if Alexander was running around too. So I can't blame him.
Think Alexander should be the security officer to Worf?
No. I'm not saying anything about
this. This is my mini me. He will.
So anything else to say about Worf?
Well, I mean, and again, as you see in the movies. Obviously, Worf randomly shows up, so that's sort of is cured there. But I think it's interesting how, you know, what would be the role once Worf leaves. You know, do they keep it one person, or is it Lieutenant Daniels and someone else, or whatever? So,
okay. Let me
think
here. I had something. I know. I lost my place.
Oh, no.
I lost my head.
Security.
Yes. So, you know, we're actually having all these discussions about delegating and separating of powers and stuff. You know what? Deep Space Nine did this pretty well, actually. Odo, I think, showed up in Ops twice or three times. I mean, obviously, that's
an exaggeration. He's probably there every scene. We just didn't know it.
It's true. It's
that console isn't even there in half the episodes.
So, for the purposes of this conversation, we'll stick with Odo for the most part. But now that I'm thinking about it, like, you know, I'm glad they didn't try to like shoehorn him on the Defiant and be like, oh, now you're going to be tactical here. I don't really know that there was
Daniel,
a tactical.
Daniel. Yeah. They didn't shoehorn Odo in. They shoehorned the counselor, okay? They shoehorned in the science officer. They shoehorned any schmuck who was walking around, and you're now the tactical officer on the most advanced tactical ship in Starfleet, okay?
Until Worf got there.
Well.
I mean, you know, he was pretty much...
Yeah, but then
I think
he
Bashir
was
shooting phasers half the time. I mean, you know...
But they didn't have Odo do it, and that's good. Credit
to
where
it's due.
Kills
people with his bare hands on the Defiant. That's his trademark.
So, it's interesting because the Deep Space Nine obviously shifted the paradigm of all, you know, Star Trek in general, just by having it on a space station. And so this role did change. And, of course, you know, the whole, we've heard this 1,000 times, is, you know, it's a Western, and he's the sheriff, you know, the local constabulary. You know, that's what his role is. And it does it really, really well and really effectively because that's what Odo cares about and that's part of who he is. And I think, and I'm glad, like I said, they don't try to make him the Worf.
Odo, we need you up on the bridge. We got to shoot these. No, it doesn't even make any sense. I can't even say it.
Well, and I think that it's, you know, because there's obviously he has his Bajoran force or, you know, his militia, his Bajorti security forces. And so, you know, you actually see, like, in the background, like, you can always see, you know, in that, what color, light brown, I don't know
like
what
a,
color you call
like
that.
Like a beige.
Yeah. But anyway.
Beige patrol on alert.
Yeah, beige patrol. But, like, when they're walking around, you're like, oh, those are members of Odo's security team.
Right.
And, you know, if there's, you know, when they're about to attack the station, you know, you spread out the security people and they'll fight the Klingons or the you know, Jem'Hadar or whoever. And so, yeah, the fact that he has a team and a force
He's got a budget. That's basically it. So
yeah, and security office. And I think what they really introduce in Deep Space Nine, security cameras. I just feel like
they're everywhere. Sensors. I think, yeah.
Yeah, I like how Daniel's like Odo does his job a little too well. A little.
Yeah, I was just gonna say if Odo had his way, that would be. It would be pretty bad.
And I think the interesting thing about Odo is, of course, he was security chief or whatever word you want to use under the Cardassians.
So he has history with the ship or the station.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think that's explored, obviously, you know, in his character and in episodes about it, you know, having that same role under two entirely different governments or organizations and, you know, how he views justice or whatever. But anyway, but yes.
Justice. Yeah.
Well, now I'm trying to think of the times when the station's been under attack and they've, you know, had to return fire or something. Because basically, they never go looking for trouble because they're in a station. It doesn't really. It moves once.
Station.
But I kind of always, in my memory at least, picture it's usually Major Kira who's like firing the phasers. Because not, or is it Dax? I mean, but she's science. I don't know. It.
Look, I as I'm going to just, you know.
All I know is it's not Sisko, because he's above that.
I'm just
that.
Saying, as much as they throw people in the Defiant, ops to me is very ill-defined on what anything does in that. I know where O'Brien Station is. I know the middle part Major Kira usually kicks and plays around with.
Yeah.
And I know Dax kind of hovers in the same area, but what any of those other stations do, I don't know where the phaser button is. I'd be very confused.
So basically, it's like the Prometheus, and you're there, and it's like beep, 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 and you're like, I got nothing, guys. I can't.
It's like it'd be like when Quark and Odo were running that station one episode or something. I forget when it was, but
it is weird, right? Though I mean, that it is a very confusing design. Like obviously, you're kind of always facing the office, Sisko's office, and then on the opposite wall would be that one person transporter.
Yes.
Which is really weird. I don't know, but oh, I guess maybe it makes sense for a space station. I don't know, but anyways,
and you got the view screen, yeah, which yeah,
well,
and the view screen,
view
and,
portal,
and then the turbo.
I mean, screen. I feel like is generous.
Yeah, and then the turbo, and everything else is kind of it's weird because they don't spend nearly as much time inhabiting that space as the rest of Star Trek does with the bridges. So, or I feel like they don't. Maybe they do. I don't. I guess I've never really like looked into it, but I've. My gut feeling is that they don't, so we don't really have an attachment in the same way we do to the bridges of the, like, you can, you, I'm sure we could all say where we would go to do this, to do X, or where this person is on the Voyager, or blah, 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 like on the bridge. And it's not the same with Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I'm looking at a little print right now, and yeah, I mean, there's two doors that lead in, there's two turbo lifts, but it's so unsymmetrical that it's just... It's really weird to try to wrap your head around like what you're looking at and where things are.
Well, you just to throw a monkey wrench. You did have oh, it's slipping. The Edinburgh is not his name.
Eddington.
Thank you,
Eddington.
Lieutenant Commander or Lieutenant Eddington or whatever his name was. So you had him as sort of a temporary tactical officer for Deep Space Nine.
Oh, it's true. It's true, and I really liked Eddington. I mean. Oh.
Before he went all Maquis on us.
I like both aspects of him. I kind of wish, again, I like when Star Trek has these minor secondary characters. And certainly nobody can accuse Deep Space Nine of not doing that enough. But, and they introduced him fairly, like, I don't know, I can't remember, 4 or 5 episodes before that ever became a thing. So it was good. It was good to lead up into that arc. So I like both regular Eddington and evil Eddington. But I kind of also, oh, and there was that other guy, or was he an engineer? The guy from Texas. Oh, shoot. He was in like 2 episodes. Oh, man, I really liked him, though. Anyways,
about a tactical guy from Texas?
Yes, yes, yeah. He was arguing with, huh? I can't remember his name. It doesn't matter.
I don't remember this character at all.
He was only in like, he might have been an engineer. I can't remember what his role was now. Doesn't matter. Okay. We're going off on
I think Daniel just made
I think he did. But it's Deep Space Nine. So
it was a dream. It's
the First Republic of Texas in the 24th century. Okay.
Space Texas.
So I guess that would be Jupiter, maybe?
Well,
I don't
there's
know.
Only
Anyways,
actually one you know, there's one son. It's a single son. I mean, I guess like the lone, like a lone.
Oh, I get. Like a lone, I see what you're doing there.
What else? V.
Yeah.
Gaseous anomaly.
So yeah, let's also talk about the Defiant and how this super Borg warship doesn't have a defined security role on the bridge at all. Or as far as I know. I mean, I'm sure there's a quote unquote tactical station, but there's nobody.
I'll put that out.
Consistent.
I would say Defiance also. I mean, and maybe I just don't watch Deep Space Nine close enough, and I'll say I'm probably guilty of that. But I could not tell you half the stations on that small shuttlecraft. Like I can. I mean, I know obviously the front is the con, duh. But anyway, and I know. O'Brien, you know, if you're looking at the captain's chair from the view screen, is on the right. But anything beyond that, I know Worf is usually on the left, but that doesn't mean anything about what station that is. So I have no idea what any of those things do.
And I think Kira's, like, normally in the front.
On the right, left. Yeah. Well, yeah, if I'm looking at the captain's chair from the view screen, she's usually on the right. Like, it's usually her, O'Brien, or maybe it's O'Brien, her, then Dax, then it's, you know, Worf or whoever. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's a minor thing, certainly. I really do like how they handled Odo. Anything else on Deep Space Nine tactical security officers? Oh, well, I mean, of course, Worf comes on, but not a big deal.
He has a made-up role. About him. It's not even real.
he leaves his security station, so we can't really say much. But all right, so let's move on then to Voyager and talk about...
Tuvok.
For a second, I was going to say Torres, and I'm like, I know that's not right.
I was thinking we could somehow think of the original tactical officer who would have had to have died. But
that's
anyway.
What I was going to say. I'm like, did he die?
I don't even know if we saw him. I'm sure we saw someone at that station, but you know.
Tuvok, I feel, has a lot of the same problems that Reed does, and the fact that he is kind of underdeveloped. And, you know, we get little bits of cool and fun and great. And then, you know, it's just like, especially in the beginning, early on, like this, the Tuvok Janeway relationship is super good stuff and like really interesting. And then we just kind of forget that they were buddies for forever.
I would think, and I agree largely. And I think the challenge is Vulcans. I mean, Vulcans are very difficult because I would say both Tuvok, and I know I'm in the minority. I think a lot of fans like T'Pol, to me, she just never grabbed me, and maybe I'm just speciest and don't like Vulcans, but I just, to me, it just seems like the
you have to go into the decon chamber for
that. But I just feel like it's hard for writers to write Vulcans. And I get it. I can see the challenge. I mean, they're logical, and what else do you do from there? And I don't know the answer, but I feel like it is often hard. And I think was Tuvok's tough spot. You know, like, does he grow as a character? Because he's still the Vulcan-y Vulcan, you know, Mr. Vulcan. You know, it's hard for him to be like, oh, he really changed over the 7 years. I'm like, other than shaking a foot at Neelix at the end there, I don't know, you know, what you would say was different about him other than he's like the only character who got promoted, apparently. And then demoted. And then the first season, don't look at his rank, people. It's really confusing. But anyway, but he did get promoted to lieutenant commander halfway through. So, but I the one thing I do like about Tuvok, or one thing I thought was interesting, is like Next Generation, Worf almost never did an investigation. Like, if there's an investigation, it'd be Geordi, or it'd be Data, or it'd be whoever. And then Odo obviously would do it because he's sort of the private eye of Deep Space Nine, the Dixon Hill, if you will. But like, I think Tuvok, he could do an investigation. Like, if there's a suspected murderer, or if Tom, you know, got caught sleeping with a girl and killing the husband, you know, Tuvok's on the case. Like, he's an investigator. So, like, I feel like he's very more security than tactical, if we had to be like, what's your strength as a... So...
Yeah, I mean, he is Tuvok the detective. I mean, he whether they died in the holodeck with 3D glasses, I mean, he is on it, and he likes unraveling mysteries. So.
Well... I mean, he did do that, Darren.
That's how we knew. That's how good he is. When he can't figure out who it is, he commits the act himself.
I can detect it myself.
But Tuvok is, again, really well defined, I think, in the fact that he's obviously on the bridge. He is the tactical officer, but when he's the security, it just... He feels much more balanced, I think, than Worf, as far as the definition of the role. Whereas I don't feel like on Voyager they need to split that role into two. Like, it works as one.
And it's a much smaller ship. And they're literally forced to deal with exactly. limited resources, including personnel. So that does make a lot of sense.
I mean, Neelix could be a good security officer. Just bring him ranks.
No, please don't do that. But I was going to say that... But we are shown several times that he has, like, a staff, like, of, like, at least five or six people. Possibly more that we don't know about. So he could definitely delegate some of that stuff. I mean, of course, we see the important stuff, maybe. And maybe there is stuff going on, like, who stole all the Leola roots or something. And maybe he gives that to one of his underlings. I don't know. But... I like Tuvok. I really do like Tuvok. And I think he doesn't have... He obviously isn't as over-the-top, you know, boisterous and stuff. I think it was smart to make him a Vulcan because it both challenges what we understood about Vulcans at the time. I think a lot of people didn't expect a Vulcan to fill that role because we're told how peaceful they are and pacifistic they are all the time. But it also kind of added a little flavor to his character as well.
Yeah, I mean, does that... You know, because again, this is being specious. Like, it kind of reminds me of, like, who's it, Commander Sutherland in the Next Generation? Like, oh, you wouldn't have a Klingon counselor or, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, does a Vulcan tactical officer?
I think a Vulcan tactical officer would do.
Do you think there's a philosophy problem?
He would do it as best as he could, just like any other Starfleet officer. And I agree with you, though, Daniel. I mean, Tuvok's a great. I mean, Tim Russ is a great portrayal of a Vulcan because. He's really the first Vulcan since Spock, and that we see in a major way, you know, on the cast. And he really does a good job of with limited connections to Vulcan, but describing, you know, what we expect him to be. I mean, they have feelings just like the rest of us, but they just contain them better. So. In that way, it's like you want someone who is passionate about the ship, who is passionate for his crew and his captain, like Tuvok is, but also is going to stay level-headed inside.
Okay. Inside passion.
It's like inside voices, so you only use it at certain times. You know, Philip, to answer your question, though, we argue against this whole monoculture that Star Trek portrays all the time. So, you know, it's I see what your point is, but it's like the same thing as like where we're always like, well, we want to see another Klingon besides a warrior.
Right.
So and presumably this is an entire species that has gone out into the stars and interacted with other creatures before, so they have to have at least some level of
we used to be artists and poets,
defense capability.
We used to be philosophers.
We merely used sharp words as our defenses.
The pen is mightier than the sword in Klingon culture. That's mightier than the batleth.
I imagine it's a lot like what Earth culture is supposedly like, where it's not there's not a lot of infighting. It's not like wars between the Vulcans are prevalent, but hey, you know, I mean, look at the Romulans and the Klingons, and I'm sure the Vulcans always get in scrapes with them too, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, if you go by Enterprise standards, apparently the Vulcans are just shooting everyone, spying left and right and blowing up Andorians.
Well, actually, we should talk about
that. Oh, yeah, actually, I would say if they had brought Shran on in that season, in the fifth season of Enterprise.
Mythical fifth season
of Enterprise. What would his role have been?
Yeah, I doubt it would have been a tactical officer, though, because, well...
They probably would have introduced morale officer. And,
counselor to the... He has a map for that part of space, so he's going to be really valuable.
I'm telling you, this...
Well, he's just a liaison, obviously, but...
I'm just picturing, like...
I've
been on planets where the median temperature is 40 degrees above freezing.
I'm just picturing Shran with, like, the Neelix apron and chef's hat. Just be like...
With his little ears poking... There's a little antenna poking out.
That's how he keeps the hat on so well.
So, guys, let's end with this thought. Something that we've been kind of doing now since we're counting down. Oh, by the way, again, not to date ourselves too hard here. Filming has officially begun on Discovery. So it is a real show. They promise. So what do we want to see in this role for Discovery?
Well, okay. We don't, like, I mean, I know I'm asking, like, the air, because there's no answer you're going to give me. But, like, we haven't heard anything about tactical security officer. We've heard the radish, head of radishes. We've heard Klingons. We've heard...
fungi specialist.
Alien specialist that we've never seen of before. And then the number one. And that's it. I assume that's the whole crew. I've just named the entire cast. That's it. So it's just a small feature, but anyway, so yeah, I don't know. Klingons, right? They have some tactical officers. I think they're all tactical officers, if I remember correctly.
They like to shoot things. It's true. So presumably Discovery will be shot at. I'm going to make a bold prediction here. At least once, there might be a bit of a skirmish. Yeah. So, I hope they have somebody capable in the role. It'll be interesting. I kind of hope they do something where they kind of subvert expectations, like with Tuvok, or, you know, I don't know, give us a packlet.
Discovery's
or something.
Actually a Klingon ship. Oh.
No. 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 What about you, Dern? Interested in anything specific?
I think it's interesting in the fact that I know some of the theories going around of what the concepts of the show will be is maybe like two crews. Like we'll kind of jump back and forth between like a Klingon crew and a Federation crew. So I'm just interested though, what we're going to get, because it kind of feels, at least with how little casting we've gotten, I mean, we've gotten roles, but not like a huge amount. It kind of feels how, you know, when Next Gen started and they didn't have a chief engineer, that was a main character. And I'm wondering, like, are they going to try something similar where they don't cast all of the big tentpole positions? I don't know.
They're just going to go to, like, the empty phaser room. It'll be like, let's go down here. Let's go fire phasers. All right, guys, let's go back to the bridge. We're good.
It probably just depends how they design the bridge. Like, how many seats do you have? Okay, that's how many people, and they all do something.
If we even see the bridge, since the main character is not the captain, you know.
They're going to build a bridge, Philip. I mean...
if they don't build it for the first episode,
they're
going to
build
gonna
a Klingon bridge and a Federation bridge, and they're going to have two bridges, and it's going to be great.
Well, I think if they turn the lights way down on the Discovery Bridge, they could probably just, and maybe red hue a little bit.
It's just a redress where it's like, it's just a red light, guys. I know, I can see what you're doing,
guys. Bold prediction. Okay, so I know they've changed the design of the ship since that whatever we saw, but. I'm going to predict the saucer is going to be Federation and the rest is going to be Klingon, and they literally bolted the ships together. So half the crew is in the back half.
It's like,
that's not going to happen.
It's like sort of, it's the Voyager concept, but it's like, you know what, guys? We made it a problem making them all one crew. What if there were two ships together?
Two crews.
Your Klingons are in my Starfleet.
No, your Starfleet is in my Klingon. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
So it could actually be like the Megazord, where they just meet in space
and the cells and all form the bridge.
Oh man, that would be awesome. That would be pretty awesome. Well,
but see, they have lots of
lots
of errors because they're using Federation standard and they're using Kelicams, and it's not gonna work.
Oh no.
But I think the end of the first season, they're going to discover this new thing to add to the ship. And it's going to be
The super Discovery Zord.
Super Mega Ultra Discovery.
Oh, man. So now nothing that Discovery does, no matter how good, will ever live up to the Discovery Zord.
Guys, if there is some combination of crew, we're going to look back at this episode and just laugh.
Oh, man. Maybe we'll get to see the beginnings of the Klingon Exchange Program. Who knows? Anyways, but... All right. Well, that was fun, guys, talking about that. But, I think we've talked it enough. And maybe now it's just time to shoot at it and hope it goes away.
Right on target.
Yeah. Are there shields up, Philip? So. Are they?
Oh, there we go. Sound effects and everything. All right, Philip, when you're not blastering people here on the podcast, where can people find you?
Oh, I mean, I can come down to your level, Daniel, if you want to. I can do level two. but they can find me on Twitter, where my handle is NC Public Servant.
And Darren, what if people wanted the patented Darren alert? How would they get hold of you?
Daddy! Yeah, it's the sound of a child crying at 3 in the morning. It's going to wake anybody up. But now that reminded me, though, Philip, I think Guinan should have been at tactical, because if she has to come down to Worf's level, I mean, obviously, she's right in the front of the ship. She has a great view of what they're attacking.
She's got that big gun.
Yeah, I think a hidden talent officer.
It shoots sparks.
And if there's any trouble, she has a saucer separation in her head.
Oh, nice.
But
nice.
Yes, they can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSCIFI. They can also find me here on the Nerd Party Network on my other podcast, Goodnight Moon, now part of the Nerd Party Network, where we talk about space and space exploration, my 4-year-old daughter and myself.
And if people want to get a hold of me, they can find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That's the number, not the word. Hey, Philip. What are we doing next week?
Well, you know, we talked about a lot of interesting characters, you know, and what they did on the job. But I'm interested in what our characters do off the job. And so next episode, we're going to be talking about the off-duty activities. That's not a metaphor. I'm not trying to be. It's hobbies. I don't know why your mind's going there. I'm talking about the hobbies of our crews and their very interesting interests.
Don't worry. I've composed a solo on my clarinet.
Well, it's going to be mostly water polo, so I mean, I know everyone understands the rules. I'm not going to have to, you know, insult anyone's intelligence going over water polo rules, but we'll talk about the stats, where Stanford is in the rankings. It'll be great.
Nice. Nice. Well, I will be sure to bring my spreadsheets. So, we will see you all next week.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Daniel Prue. Stranded here on SETI Alpha 3.